So you called this the anatomy of a disaster. What does that mean exactly? Disaster for who? The British? The colonists?
By disaster, I mean a military disaster. As you know, the story does not end well for the British Army. The leader did not speak the language, he lacked experience in leading military battle, and he was deep in enemy territory. But this was also a disaster for the everyday people, too. We have their voices, an on-the-ground perspective from the men and women who lived here, and even a German surgeon traveling with the British Army. These are not the usual voices that we hear in the history of the Revolutionary War, but rather authentic and distinctive accounts of the survivors of this civil war.
You know, I never really thought of the American Revolutionary War as a civil war. It is a bit odd for me.
Not really that odd. It will become clear as the story unfolds.
So Jane McRae's killed?
Her story is only one of numerous reports of the brutality that is surrounding Burgoyne's advance. Terror is ringing across the hills and river valley.
And you said Burgoyne was marching through here. So the people living here are either loyalists seeking protection in British camps or signing up with the rebels to fight against Burgoyne. Is this the beginning of his downfall?
There's much more to it. Let me clue you in about what's been going on for Burgoyne. First off, he's quite a charismatic man. An eloquent and capable leader, although sometimes a bit of a blowhard. He had a good plan in place. He called it
Thoughts for Conducting War on the Side of Canada.
I believe the plan had three parts to it. Ethan, look on the website and read them out loud.
Here it is. Burgoyne's brainchild, Thoughts for Conducting War on the Side of Canada. Prong 1. He, Burgoyne, would lead one British army from Quebec to Albany along the Lake Champlain Upper Hudson River Corridor. Prong 2. General Howe,
the head honcho of the British war effort,
looks like you know your stuff, would lead his army up the Hudson River to Albany from New York City. And prong number three, General Barry St. Ledger would bring a third army from the west
along the Mohawk River. And once the three generals united in Albany, they would have succeeded in cutting off New England,
the seedbed of the revolution,
from the rest of the country. He's going to nip this civil uprising in the bud.
The point was to take control of the waterways from Quebec to New York City. These waterways were key to the continent. You have to remember that this part of North America was hilly, rocky, and heavily wooded. There were very few roads, so Indian tribes and later European armies controlled their territory through battles that were won and lost up and down these waterways.
Control of the interconnected waterways of the Lakes to Locks Passage was control of the continent. Got it. The superhighway of the 18th century. Woohoo!
Well done. So that's Burgoyne's plan.
Except that people who might not have feared him before are now feeling intimidated and terrorized by his Indians.
Yep, that's just one of three sticky situations.
Okay, sticky situation number two.
Instead of heading up the Hudson to meet Burgoyne in Albany, Howe decided to head down to Philly to pursue George Washington. And St. Ledger failed to capture Fort Stanwix on the Mohawk, so he withdrew to Quebec.
Oh, double bummer. So he lost two arms of his three-prong attack. Burgoyne's on his own to cut off New England. Sticky situation number three. Are you holding the worst out for last?
Absolutely. He had a severe lack of provisions. You know, when I learned Revolutionary War history, I pictured a neat formation of red-coated soldiers marching down the road to meet a ragtag group of rebels for a face-off. But now I've learned it wasn't like that at all. Although the army was orderly, they had a messy entourage. Soldiers, tradesmen, engineers, women and children. They were working hard to support the army. Everyone needed to be fed, and that's tons of food. And on top of that, there were very few draft animals or carts or wagons to lug supplies over land.
So if Burgoyne was an experienced commander of this army, how did he get his supply line stretched so thin?
Well, there's quite a story to this campaign. But in a nutshell, Burgoyne is weeks behind schedule. After taking control of Fort Ticonderoga, located north of here, he abandoned his plans to sail his soldiers and supplies down Lake George. And with just a short carry on a well-built road, it would have taken him only a few days to get to Fort Edward. Instead, he chased the rebels down Lake Champlain to Whitehall, and then he had to build a road to Fort Edward.
So he went by land instead. We've been driving around a lot, and this landscape is hilly, boggy, and densely forested.
You're so smart. Yes, he dragged his army south through the wilderness where they had to build their own road. It took weeks.
In a hot, muggy summer. Ugh, the bugs. How many people had to endure the journey over land?
Thousands. And like I said before, this was not just soldiers in red coats looking austere and playing fife and drum. This looked more like flowing chaos.
Wow. This is not the image I had of the British Army.
And Ethan, as I was saying, his supply line was stretched incredibly thin, close to breaking. A very dangerous thing. Enter Lieutenant Colonel Friedrich Baum, commander of the German Dragoons, and his mission
Wait,
is...
what's a German Dragoon? Ooh, found it. Ah, cool. An elite mounted regiment from Germany. Were they mercenaries?
No. These soldiers were on loan to King George from his brother-in-law, Prince Karl of Braunschweig, to help put down the American Rebellion. They were a highly trained regiment.
Kind of like our modern-day Army Rangers?
Yes, but they are mounted on horseback. However, these guys had few horses. So Burgoyne had received intelligence of a rebel supply depot scantily guarded near Bennington, which is about 40 miles to the southeast of here.
So this mission for Baum is to raid the depot and help mend Burgoyne's supply line.
Yeah, and also to get more horses for the Dragoons so they can make the best use of their skills and do their thing. Here's Baum's commanding officer under Burgoyne, General Radazel.
Our army must be brought into a condition in which it can move with much more celerity than it has been accustomed to. That is, the requisite number of horses must be procured to carry the necessary baggage of the officers, the tents, ammunition, artillery, and provision.
Also, it was thought that Baum would be able to recruit more loyalist support and maybe even confuse the enemy of his real intentions. Here's Burgoyne's order.
The excursion will cross the Battenkill. We will divert the attention of the enemy forces.
Aunt Haley, you've got me now. I really want to know how this mission went wrong now that you've given me the spoiler with the anatomy of a disaster.
Hang on there, Ethan. At this point, it's a toss-up.
I still don't get the Indians' role in this fight. Why are they fighting with the British?
Well, the American colonists and the Native Americans understood that each posed a pretty profound threat to each other. You see, for the Indians, American independence ensured more encroachments on their land.
Yeah. Hindsight, a total threat to their existence. Didn't they know what they were in for? Were the British any better? Get this. Quote after quote from the European whites, savages this and savages that. It doesn't sound like there was much respect for them.
Well, actually, I don't think it was meant to be dehumanizing. You have to remember that the Europeans found this new world to be a wilderness. And everything in it, including the native people, were very strange, physically and culturally. Neither group really understood each other. Savage was a descriptor of the people they found in the wilderness. At that time, it meant people from the woods, or barbarian people, primitive and pagan.
I still don't understand why the Indians would ally with the English over the rebels.
Well, I guess you picked the best of the worst. History is filled with alliances like that.
You mean, the enemy of my enemy becomes my friend.
Right. The British promised to protect Native American families while the warriors were fighting, and also offered to protect their homelands from the colonists. And to sweeten the deal, the Brits promised them spoils of war.
Okay, so an alliance with Burgoyne meant protection and loot. And maybe a little revenge against the colonists?
Maybe. But remember, Burgoyne had issued a message to the colonists at the beginning of his campaign. Listen again to the warning to those who had become American rebels.
I have but to give stretch to the Indian forces under my direction, and they amount to thousands, to overtake the hardened enemies.
But he asked them only to intimidate and loot, not kill, unless they were directly confronted. It seems that his instructions were a bit lost in the translation.
So Burgoyne really didn't want the Indians to kill someone like Jane McRae.
No, he mistakenly thought he would have control of the Indians.
A fraught adventure. What's next for us?
We follow Baum on his excursion to Bennington.